Hello and welcome to this episode of the Alternative Frequencies podcast from the Lebanese Center for Policy Studies here in Beirut, Lebanon. I'm Bilal Alamin, Senior Editor at LCPS and host of Alternative Frequencies. Today we have with us Dr. Jasmine Lillian Diab. Dr. Diab is an Assistant Professor of Migration Studies at the Lebanese American University's Department of Social Sciences. We'll be talking today about immigration with an E, that is, the pros and cons of Lebanese emigration, brain drain versus remittances. Welcome, Jasmine.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so before we go into the pros and the controversial issue of immigration, let's maybe draw a general picture of Lebanese emigration. And I just for the sake of making it easy, I know these are long stretches of time, but before the Civil War and then during the Civil War, 1975 to 1990, and then after that period, and we'll talk about the most recent period a little later, mm-hmm. but we often hear really huge bloated numbers, like 10 million in the Lebanese diaspora.
We do.
So let's, maybe you can give us a more accurate picture of what actually exists.
10 million is actually one of the more realistic numbers that I've heard. A quick Google search on this will tell you that the Lebanese diaspora falls anywhere between 4 and 14 million. And the means through which this is calculated is often not revealed, right? We often find these sources, we see these numbers, and we're not sure how they take place. Other estimates, obviously a little bit maybe more logical in the way that they come about. These are estimates similar to the ones the Lebanese Emigration Research Center at NDU use, the Maurice Khairallah Center for Lebanese Diaspora Studies at NC State use. These estimates place the Lebanese diaspora anywhere between 6 and 8 million, assuming that the number of Lebanese living outside the country is thought to be at least double the number of citizens. Of this population, about 1.2 million are registered for their Lebanese citizenship. They actually have their Lebanese citizenship. So these are numbers that were more, I would say, clear in how they were calculated and the methods that they used. The reason why we have different numbers all the time is because of the way global estimates are taken into account and the way we deem specific numbers representative of exclusively Lebanese when sometimes they're representative of the Arab region or the Middle Eastern region. So the largest concentration of people of Lebanese ancestry is thought to be in Brazil, where we talk about numbers anywhere between 5.8 and 7 million. But this is also criticized by many scholars and researchers as an exaggeration. If we dig a little deeper into the Brazilian Institute of Geography and Statistics numbers, these numbers reveal that less than a million Brazilians claim even Middle Eastern origin. So a lot of the times the hearsay and what these people identify as are not recorded officially in numbers. So the estimates are really just estimates. Another example of this is, for instance, in the United States, where the U.S. is credited with having at least between 1.3 and 3.3 million Lebanese Americans. And these numbers vary, of course, based on different sources. But in reality, the 3.3 million number, I dug a little deeper prior to this interview, represents the total number of Arab Americans, when if you dig into this group of people, only about one-third identify as Lebanese Americans. So it really is about how you interpret numbers. But again, I would say that the most logical estimate, based on the method by which it was calculated, is between 6 and 8 million at most, so double the population of Lebanon.
Okay, so related to this question, because we group them all together in terms of Lebanese immigrants, and this will become more important later, but there's really different kinds of Lebanese immigrants. Let's say, for example, on the one end of the spectrum, you have people who left quite some time ago, and have maintained really very little ties to Lebanon, and then have not come back at all, or probably won't come back if they're still alive. And then on the other end of the spectrum is you have people like the people who've gone to the Gulf, or West Africa, where there are lots high concentrations of Lebanese immigrants, these communities tend to maintain ties, send money back, those kinds of things, and probably are actually planning to return mm-hmm. at some point. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a sense of this spectrum and what kinds of numbers are involved in that?
In the areas of numbers, this would be very difficult to identify, for sure, because we're still very sensitive and we debate the actual number of the overall diaspora itself. But definitely, I agree with you that there are different degrees of involvement from the Lebanese diaspora in the affairs of the country, whether it's politically, socially, economically, etc. More recent generations, I would say younger generations, have gone to the Gulf and to the MENA region as it opened up and harbored in and called for immigrants. And definitely these people are younger, they are closer in proximity, they don't lose their language very much. You know, these are not a generation of immigrants whose great-great-grandfather left. These are people our age, these are people from the generation right older than us. And then they are very involved in the affairs of the country. They are the ones sending back the money for their families left at home. They are the ones responsible for the highest percentages of some of the remittances, et cetera, et cetera. But as well, we cannot generalize because to a large extent, a lot of the diaspora in the Americas, for example, contribute very much to the country as well and are heavily involved. It's quite interesting to see waves of involvement, at least, from the Lebanese diaspora. Recently, we had initiatives like the Lebanese Diaspora Energy Conference of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. This brought about people from all over the world of Lebanese origin that had really had no ties prior to this conference to the country. You started to find people renewing their interest in getting their Lebanese citizenship. You started to see people speaking about voting out of country. You started to see people engaging with their community, even with the little Arabic that they know. So I don't know if we can categorize Lebanese diaspora into these categories, but we can definitely say that there are waves of interest in the country that come and go. I don't think necessarily Lebanon always presents a context for people to be involved, whether it's in investments and political participation, etc. But there are definitely waves at which people are involved.
And you mentioned that in terms of citizens, actual people who still hold on to their citizens abroad, diaspora is around 1.3 million.
1.2 million, yes, 1.2 million. On the recent estimate, yes.
Okay. So regardless of the accuracy of the numbers, we know for a fact that Lebanese have been emigrating in large numbers, I would guess, relative to other countries. And since the founding of modern Lebanon, maybe over 100 years ago, why do you think Lebanon has been historically a country of immigration? Is it geography, you know, the fact that we're this coastal, you know, close to Europe, or is it demographics, maybe the density of the population? Is it the persistent, I'm sure this is a cause, the persistent political and economic crises that have plagued the country for so many years, or the lack of even the basic lack of viability of Lebanon as a nation state to kind of be able to hold on to its population? How do you rate these various reasons?
If you read about Lebanese migration and you read about these phenomenons of movement across Lebanon's history, you can date it back to 1860, the civil conflict in Mount Lebanon and Damascus. You can go as far back as you want, even beyond 100 years back. One of the most interesting recent articles that I read says that Lebanese people emigrated under two sets of circumstances. So the first is generally characterized by relative stability in between ongoing conflicts, relative stability in periods of recession, in periods of economic uncertainty. And then the second reason why, under which circumstances Lebanese people leave, are because of conflict and strife. So we're talking 75 to 90, we're talking more recently 2006, 2007, we're talking more recently yesterday. We're talking based on this, you know, the conflict that's ongoing right now, whether it's our political stagnation or it's our economic crisis or our financial crisis. So there are definitely two sets of circumstances under which Lebanese people leave, and they complement each other. So do we blame our geographic proximity to perhaps other countries in the regions that have conflict for the fact that we have political instability and for the fact that the circumstances where we are not the greatest, you know, for people to live and stable conditions for people to actively politically participate, for people to actually have a stable income and finances, for you not to wake up every morning and not know how much money is worth, you know, your money in the bank is worth. So I think generally for these two sets of circumstances, it's either throughout a conflict and while a conflict is happening, or in between conflicts where the country is still grappling and struggling to get itself together. But then in contrast, we can see exactly on Lebanon's timeline where people come back. So there's also the conflict where they leave, the periods in between conflicts that are unstable. But as soon as everything goes back to normal, just a bit, all the investments come back in, all the people come back. We're a resilient population. We definitely are. So yes, I think those two circumstances definitely,
the political, so economic and political instability are usually
the
cases.
And even when there's not an actual ongoing conflict sending people away, the political and economic circumstances under which we live, you know, in periods of relative non-conflict, are also drivers for people to leave. Mm-hmm. We're going to probably talk about this a little later in our discussion, but I mean, the last 2 years have sent off thousands of people alone, you know.
Mm. Well, let's get to that question about the past couple of years. As most of our listeners know, that Lebanon's has been facing multiple crises since 2019, late 2019, and particularly economic and financial crisis. What kind of picture do we have for those past couple of years?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because the last couple of years have been very difficult to comprehend, especially for the Lebanese context. The world is grappling with a pandemic, and this has affected, you know, the political and social and economic fabrics of the world. But then Lebanon, in true Lebanese style, does everything triple fold, right? So we're grappling with an explosion that we still don't have answers to. We're grappling with a severe economic crisis. And at the beginning of COVID, Lebanon was just coming out, and even at the peak of revolutions and protests throughout the country. So these things started prior to the pandemic, were exacerbated by the pandemic, and then we had this kind of snowball effect. A very recent article published actually by the New Humanitarian says that according to a Lebanese research firm, I believe it's called Information International, mm-hmm. About 67,000 Lebanese people immigrated in 2019 alone. And that was a significant increase from the first year, from the prior year. The firm also reported that right after the explosion, departures, one-way tickets out of Beirut increased 36%. So again, these estimates are always up for debate, and they're always understood and interpreted based on the very limited context that they're placed in. We don't know if any of these people left throughout these past couple years and are now returning. We don't really know what the realities are there. But the economic crisis definitely drove out a significant portion of Lebanese young people. Between 2019 and 2021, half my family lives abroad now. So it's quite an interesting it's an interesting phenomenon to try to capture, because it's so layered, and the context that we live in today is not just, again, COVID. It's not just an economic crisis. It's also an explosion in our capital. It's also our political stagnation. There are so many factors that contribute to this. So while we wish to pin down exactly what drives people out, sometimes when there's such an intersectional conflict, you really don't know where to begin. So that's a little bit of the numbers that I was able to find. But of course, very recent numbers are problematic to pin down as well. We're not the best with numbers here. Mm-hmm. This is a situation. So yes, this is an estimate actually just from something I read the other day. So
yeah, I tried to find out more about how Information International, so they seem to be one of the sources for this.
Yes.
But they do a kind of, the way they study it, or the way they calculate it, from what I understood, which is also problematic, is they look at people who have left and haven't come back in a year.
Yes.
As how to do it. I don't know if they do it every month and how it's calculated over time. But anyway, basically is what I heard is, around 40,000 2018, 60 to 70,000 mm-hmm. 2019. They said that there, of course, 2020 is hard also because of the restrictions.
That's true.
Exactly. The travel restrictions.
Exactly. I mean, we question numbers that we read about Lebanon all the time, but as well, I think civil society has the largest task with actually putting as much number, as many, you know, estimates and as much numbers out there as we can, because in countering this, we have a government that's not the best with numbers, not the best with statistics, not the best with keeping track with people. So it's left to these think tanks and these, you know, civil society activists and these organizations to kind of piece the realities together to paint a picture for us. And so I'd love to hear more about how they calculated this estimate, definitely. But again, you really, you cannot blame think tanks and institutes and all of that when their numbers sometimes are a little bit different, you know. There needs to be maybe a little more coordination there, I think, and how these numbers are brought about, I think.
Sure. And maybe if you can explain to people who are not familiar with Lebanon about why, for example, Lebanon has had only one census, basically, in 1932, I believe, right?
How long is this podcast?
But it would be a good background, because it's the kind of original sin of all the numbers,
definitely,
right?
Definitely. I think if we were to oversimplify it for, I'm sure, your international listeners, it's that demographics in Lebanon are very important. Our demographics, percentages in our population are very important to our power-sharing system and the political sensitivity surrounding that. So it is very problematic if we generate numbers that do not reflect or, cement this power-sharing system, even if they've changed. So the same way we don't have a history book of the modern history of our country, it's pretty much in down the same alley that we don't have more recent numbers. We always kind of frame it within this general framework of maintaining national security, but really there isn't anything to it other than the political sensitivities that surround this and maybe toppling our very sensitive power-sharing system in the country.
Okay, so let's get down to the heart of the matter here and why I wanted to have this discussion, because most of the time Lebanese talk about emigration, it tends to be negative. Things like brain drain, losing our talent, our youth, that it provides a safety valve for discontent, and thus it prevents any kind of real social change to occur in Lebanon. And although I think, I mean, at least in my modest view, there, and as an I was an immigrant as at one time. I left Lebanon for
decades. I can tell from
decades.
Your English, yeah.
I think there are big benefits both to the individuals that leave and to the country in terms of, among other things, obviously, remittances. So in scientifically speaking, in terms of the social science and you as a social scientist, what is the view of, what is the general view of immigration, the pros and cons of immigration?
Mm-hmm. A recent paper published in Migration and Social Protection, I think, by a good friend, by Professor Paul Tabar, says that the remittances constitute obviously a very significant number of Lebanon's GDP. One of the major pros is the money sent back home by migrants. The percentage of the GDP as of 2016-2017 stands somewhere around 14%. More recently, this is very difficult to calculate. We are in a financial and economic crisis, and arguably what's keeping the majority of families afloat is the fresh currency that people are sending them from abroad, right? It's those little dollars that are feeding us as small families, as family units, that are assisting us in making ends meet amid, you know, the economic and financial crisis. So one of the biggest advantages for the country that loses people is definitely the money being sent back home. The decrease pressure on jobs and on resources as well. Lebanon has one of the most educated populations in the world, but the opportunities that are available for graduates do not complement the number of people that are educated in the country. And also one of the advantages is that migrants tend to return with new skills. They bring about new concepts, new ideologies, new approaches. New ways of thinking, probably, that challenge our political system, our economic system, etc. So some of the disadvantages for the country losing people would be that people of working age move out. So this reduces the size of the country's potential workforce. It also propagates issues such as gender imbalances, because typically men are the ones who seek, you know, migration, and children and women are left behind. And you know, the what you hinted to as well, the whole concept of brain drain. Many skilled workers leave, and we hear these success stories documented of incredible mm-hmm. Lebanese people all over the world that, I mean, I wish our country could harbor and keep, you know. But on the host countries, there are also advantages and disadvantages as well. So host countries definitely benefit from a richer and more diverse culture. This helps reduce labor shortages in host countries. And migrants are also more prepared to take on specific jobs and skill sets that perhaps the general population don't have the expertise in. Some of the disadvantages for host countries definitely is increasing costs of services, healthcare, education. We see this in Lebanon when people are incoming, when forced migrants come into the country, that our infrastructure just can't handle it, you know? Like, it's just incapable of making ends meet when it comes to its own population, let alone, you know, influxes of people as well. Of course, issues such as overcrowding and issues such as disagreements between different cultures and groups, developing these kind of, you know, notions in our society of racism and xenophobia and whatnot. So I think that pretty much frames it very generally, and I think the Lebanese case is a great example of both, of being a country that loses people and a country that hosts people.
But do you, I mean, on the question of brain drain, I mean, there seems to be two sides of the coin mm-hmm. here. One is that, as you mentioned, and this I saw in some of the books written on Lebanese emigration particularly, that it did have to do with the level of education that mm-hmm. there is in Lebanon.
Definitely.
And so I always question when they talk about, for example, doctors and engineers and most, if leaving Lebanon, most of those people probably will have a, you know, hard time, or they will be taking the place of another engineer, that there's as you were saying, Lebanese tend to be very highly educated.
Yeah, and the
So the brain drain argument sometimes doesn't see the other side of it, in mm-hmm. the sense that there's also a huge supply in terms of
exactly
Lebanese brain, let's say.
That's so true. That's so true. And our country, unfortunately, does not create as many opportunities as it produces educated people. I mean... we have some of the best universities in the world. We have some of the highest percentages of educated and literate people in the country. And the country can't take all these people on, really, quite simply. Of course, because of a lot of things that our government does wrong. I mean, potentially.
Absolutely.
It should be able to, no matter how many educated people come out of the country. But yes, this tends to be the reality as well. It's not just that we are losing people because of the political and economic conditions of the country, but also because of the high levels of competition and the negative competition. So as someone that works for an academic institution, I would generally, for an opportunity to present itself as a fresh graduate, would have to wait for someone to retire. Really, the opportunities are just not there. And people hold on to their jobs in Lebanon, and they hold on to their careers, and they stay in the same job for years because of the insecurity as well surrounding these jobs. So you see people trying to push the age of retirement, right? To stay a couple more years, to stay 3 or 4 years, out of genuine need, you know, and because they feel like they have more to give. But this also hinders the possibilities of younger people entering the workforce at a certain period of time. So I think, yes, as you said, it really has a lot to do with the realities of our country when we isolate brain drain from what's going on, definitely.
Okay, so then let's talk about the Lebanese state, or the lack of, in terms of immigration and the Lebanese diaspora, how it has dealt with it. And you've touched on some of it already. And actually, there have been, in the last elections and others, attempts to make those contacts. What kind of policies and initiatives would you like to see at the official and civil society level to better deal with immigration, to both avoid its negative consequences and reap more benefits from the large and thriving Lebanese diaspora that is basically settled all around the world?
I will say that there have been some incredible initiatives to engage the diaspora. Like I said, we see this with the Lebanese Diaspora Energy Conference. We see this with opening up the doors for Lebanese abroad to regain their citizenship. We see this in the areas of out-of-country voting and the huge campaign that happened, as you said, at the last elections for this purpose. And while we see initiatives that engage our diaspora, two big pillars are very missing from having at least a sustainable engagement from our diaspora. One of them is that we don't really harbor an environment of trust for our diaspora. People are afraid to invest their money in Lebanon. People are afraid to come back. People are afraid of getting stuck here. People are being afraid all the time of coming at the wrong time, coming when things are tense, coming when they see the news and something is going on, coming amid protests. And this is the engagement that we lack because we don't foster the environment that enables this. We talk about wanting our diaspora to invest in our country. I don't think, based on our last economic and financial crisis, where people that have their money in the country already cannot access it. Can you imagine, let alone people living somewhere in the middle of nowhere that, you know, get the call like, sorry, your money's frozen at the bank. I mean, people are going to be, they're going to be concerned, and we don't foster any environment that allows this to take place. And as I said, while we have a lot of initiatives and a lot of maybe good intentions to engage our diaspora, we lack diaspora engagement policies. And diaspora engagement policies, they consist of a variety of government measures that aim at engaging, maintaining, and developing a relationship with the diaspora, and also this relationship being very rooted in trust and their sense of belonging and their sense of identity. These policies include everything from ensuring the rights and protection of diaspora members, reinforcing their national identity, their sense of belonging, as I said, fostering strong relations and facilitating their contributions to the country, whether on the social level, whether on the economic level, whether on the political level. When the campaign came out at the last elections for out-of-country voting, a lot of Lebanese people felt the way we feel at home, that the elections would not make a difference, quote-unquote, that we're going to see the same faces again, that this is propaganda. And whether this is true or not true, or whether or not their votes really would have made a difference or not, the environment that we, again, present, the context that we present, and the impression that we make on our people and our diaspora is that the country is generally very corrupt and untrustworthy. And I think that until we actually create this environment and actually have targeted diaspora engagement policies, this will all be really just good intentions. You know, you're still gonna see people that live abroad that are sentimental about their grandfather's house back in the village, and they're gonna rebuild that, and they're gonna donate to their little communities, and they're gonna assist in building libraries and places, and they're gonna give back to their universities and name a library after themselves, and they're gonna open a scholarship fund. And Lebanese people are very sentimental people, and because we are, this is how we overcome a lot of the periods of economic and political stagnation that the country, you know, imposes on us all the time. So I think harboring that properly with just a little bit of trust, as I said, there are waves that the country goes through, and when the country is doing well, you see a renewed interest. All we have to do is do well, just like for a little bit more than a limited amount of time before we mess things up again. And I think this is what's lacking, genuinely.
Mm-hmm. And that's very true. In my case, as soon as after 2000, between 2000 and 2005, I came back in 2005, mm-hmm. but I noticed that when I came, there were almost all my friends were recent returnees, because that period was kind of a period where relative stability, you felt like you could come back.
Great, and then we gave you about a year before the country broke out into war again, you
yes.
know what I mean? And it's incredibly unfortunate that we continue to really crush our diaspora in that regard. You know, people are always encouraged to come back, and then every time they do, they get a blow in the face. And this is pretty much the reality that we live in. We're going on 1 year of having our capital explode before our eyes and losing hundreds of lives, injuring thousands of people, displacing hundreds of thousands of people with no answers. Are you expecting your diaspora to somehow miraculously trust your government and assist you out of the economic crisis that you're in? They're not. They're going to channel their funds directly to the people they care about, but they will not help the country on a larger scale, you know? So it is about that. So we're looking forward to the next good period, but I mean, nobody really knows when that's going to come. And I think also the unpredictability of the country doesn't really help very much for whether we're sending people or bringing them back as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dr. Diab. That was a lot of information to digest. But thank you very much. It was all very interesting. And thank you to our listeners. We hope that you'll join us next month for another installment of Alternative Frequencies from the Lebanese Center for Policy Studies. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you so much.